Chapter 6. Bad circumstances have a way of ruining things that would otherwise be pleasant. So it was with the Baudelaire orphans and the movie Zombies in the Snow. All afternoon, the three children had sat and worried in the reptile room under the mocking stare of Stefano and the oblivious, the word oblivious here means not aware that Stefano was really Count Olaf, and thus being in a great deal of danger, chatter of Uncle Monty. So by the time it was evening, the siblings were in no mood for cinematic entertainment. Uncle Monty's jeep was really too small to hold him, Stefano, and the three orphans, so Klaus and Violet shared a seat, and poor Sonny had to sit on Stefano's filthy lap. But the Baudelaires were too preoccupied to even notice their discomfort. The children sat all in a row at the multiplex, with Uncle Monty to one side, while Stefano sat in the middle and hogged the popcorn. But the children were too anxious to eat any snacks, and too busy trying to figure out what Stefano planned to do to enjoy Zombies in the Snow, which was a fine film. When the zombies first rose out of the snowbanks surrounding the tiny alpine fishing village, Violet tried to imagine a way in which Stefano could get aboard the Prospero without a ticket and accompany them to Peru. When the town fathers constructed a barrier of sturdy oak, only to have the zombies chomp their way through it, Klaus was concerned with exactly what Stefano had meant when he spoke about accidents. And when Goethe, the little milkmaid, made friends with the zombies and asked them to please stop eating the villagers, Sonny, who was of course scarcely old enough to comprehend the orphan's situation, tried to think up a way to defeat Stefano's plans, whatever they were. In the final scene of the movie, the zombies and villagers celebrated May Day together, but the three Baudelaire orphans were too nervous and afraid to enjoy themselves one bit. On the way home, Uncle Monty tried to talk to the silent, worried children sitting in the back, but they hardly said a word in reply, and eventually he fell silent. When the jeep pulled up to the snake-shaped hedges, the Baudelaire children dashed out and ran to the front door without even saying good night to their puzzled guardian. With heavy hearts, they climbed the stairs to their bedrooms, but when they reached their doors, they could not bear to part. "Could we all spend the night in the same room?" Klaus asked Violet timidly. "Last night I felt as if I were in a jail cell, worrying all by myself."
"Me too," Violet admitted. "Since we're not going to sleep, we might as well not sleep in the same place."
"Ticko,"
Sonny agreed, and followed her siblings into Violet's room. Violet looked around the bedroom and remembered how excited she had been to move into it just a short while ago. Now the enormous window with the view of the snake-shaped hedges seemed depressing rather than inspiring, and the blank pages tacked to her wall, rather than being convenient, seemed only to remind her of how anxious she was.
"I see you haven't worked much on your inventions," Klaus said gently. "I haven't been reading at all. When Count Olaf is around, it sure puts a damper on the imagination."
"Not always," Violet pointed out. "When we lived with him, you read all about nuptial law to find out about his plan, and I invented a grappling hook to put a stop to it."
"In this situation, though," Klaus said glumly, "we don't even know what Count Olaf is up to. How can we formulate a plan if we don't know his plan?"
"Well, let's try to hash this out," Violet said, using an expression which here means talk about something at length until we completely understand it. "Count Olaf, calling himself Stefano, has come to this house in disguise and is obviously after the Baudelaire fortune. And," Klaus continued, "once he gets his hands on it, he plans to kill us."
"Tardu,"
Sonny murmured solemnly, which probably meant something along the lines of, "It's a loathsome situation in which we find ourselves."